What's up? Welcome to Canucks Talk, Trade Deadline Edition here on Sportsnet 650. I'm Jamie Dodd. Drancer's here as well.
That was
Canucks Insider.
That was like a three first round picks worth of what's up.
That was
your best one, because it was like...
That was like, I'm rolling up my sleeves and I'm getting down to business
here. It felt like vaguely stressed, but not in a like overwhelmed way, just in a like, you know, we've got work to do.
Yeah, I'm in the zone. Now, that's Thomas Drantz, who also covers the team for The Athletic. You asked me off air yesterday, have I been in sports media long enough to feel burnt out by trade deadline? And the answer is no. And partly that's because I haven't been doing it that long. Partly it's because my job is very easy.
Now,
I love trade deadline, free agent frenzy, the draft. Love it. My favorite shows to do every year.
Now, I don't think I used the term burned out. I think what I said was to feel like you're in jail.
Yes, that's what you said.
Until for me, it's not like I love the deadline too. It's just that
there's more of an element of stress
I took the dog for a walk last night to a park to play with a ball with my, you know, lovely little guy. And I sent a message to my bosses saying, going for a walk for an hour. That's what I don't like. I don't like having to like account for my presence, just because in the event that a deal comes down, you know, obviously I'm expected to drop everything.
You got
to
do something.
Yeah. So, you know, people call to make dinner plans. It's like, it's a week till the deadline. What are you talking about? I will be doom scrolling and nothing else.
See, I doom scroll, but I just don't have the like impending. You might have to work. I mean, I guess we do an emergency podcast for certain things, so that comes up. But I don't know. It doesn't bother me as much. I'm not on the hook as much as you are. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of 5-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Lots of reads to get through here. The Trade Desk, brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress, the Lower Mainland's favorite furniture and mattress destination. Visit Jags showrooms in Langley, Abbotsford, and soon to open in Coquitlam, or online at jagsfurniture.ca. So, let's set the scene here where we stand with just under now 2 hours ahead of the trade deadline. And I think the story of the day so far is a lot of targets that we had talked about as interesting the Canucks are off the board in one form of another, starting with Jake Guentzel last night going to Carolina. Jordan Eberle signs an extension in Seattle, so he's off the trade market. Tyler Toffoli ends up in Winnipeg. And most recently, Jason Zucker goes to Nashville from Arizona. We can get into the ins and outs of all those trades, why the Canucks might not have been involved in them. But as we stand here, again, with just under 2 hours, you know, you're starting to kind of really have to stretch to find, at least in terms of top six scoring help, it's becoming a bit of a stretch to find the names that might fit that mold for the Canucks. Anthony Duclair, another one, went to Tampa Bay last night.
Well, and my colleague at The Athletic, Jeremy Rutherford, reporting that Pavel Buchnevich is unlikely to move, right? So you are getting down to brass tacks here with names coming off the board fast. And we're getting close to the Barabanov zone.
I was just saying with Halford and Bruff.
Anyone else talking themselves into Alexander Barabanov?
I was looking at Frank Zaravelli's latest trade list, and he's the highest ranked rental winger still left on the board.
Yeah.
Is Alexander Barabanov. So that gives you a sense of what we're looking at, even a depth.
With 2 hours to go, the shape of
Barabanov
the deadline.
Barabanov watches on, baby.
The Barabanov sweepstakes takes center stage.
Even, you know, Chad Ruedel gets traded. Like, that would have been an interesting depth defensive addition for the Vancouver Canucks.
Yeah.
So a lot of potential targets have moved already. Now, as people have pointed out,
conventional targets.
Yes. But people have pointed out, we've seen this management group with a surprise move, an unexpected move in the past, right? So certainly don't rule that out.
Not under the wire.
No.
I mean, that's one thing about Rutherford, right? Like, if you actually go look at Rutherford's history, deadline day, like big deadline day swings, are not in his MO. Deadline day tends to be like deadline day, isolated to what we're talking about for the next hour and 50 minutes. The big swings come early. He gets his shopping done early. The Phil Kessel trade doesn't happen on deadline day. It happens a day after free agency, you know? Hronik doesn't happen on deadline day. It happens 2 weeks out. Horvat, a month out.
Lindholm.
Yeah. I mean, even the years when he was selling, it was like, Tyler Mott. You know what I mean? Like, we'd spend these last 2 hours being
Luke
like,
Shen.
What's going to happen with JT Miller? Yeah, it's that's kind of part of the MO. And by the way, I think that makes sense. You don't want to make the big decisions under stress or duress. Make them on your own timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not precluding something happening here. We know, like, I can tell you this. Alvin and Rutherford entered today like they've entered every day for the last week, hoping to bring scoring punch, additional scoring punch into their top six. I think there was a sense as this week went along that they might have to be creative to do it, right? For the last week, I've been thinking mid-range targets were the more realistic ones for the Canucks, and it's not just that I've been thinking that. That's what I've been being told. Everything we've seen to this point is more or less consistent with that. It's just that they're also missing out on some of these targets. One thing I wonder, and that I'll ask when we get to talk to Alvin in the availability, you know, Jake Guentzel moved last night after we went off the air. And there's no way I can pronounce any of those prospects' names. But rather than dollywall it up, I'm going to just tell you this. The Finnish forward in that deal would have been Vancouver's third best prospect with a bullet. No question. You'd put Vlander and Lekkerimäki ahead of him, and that's it. The Russian center, I think you could have debated him or Elias Pettersson.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the Canucks, like the Canucks are so high on Elias Pettersson, they might prefer Elias Pettersson. And that's, you know, the old gift card, it's cash on hand
kind of thing. It might be split around the league, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But that's the point is it's close.
Yep.
Right? Now, for Carolina, those guys are their 7th, 8th, 9th. You know what I mean? Those guys are the equivalent in the Canucks system of Akito Hirose. You know, like no skin off our back to deal them.
Mm-hmm.
But for the Canucks, dealing prospects of that caliber would have been painful. And I do wonder if the experience of being little brothered a little bit, where it was like very easy for Carolina to hold the Canucks off as a meaningful suitor for, you know, a guy who, make no mistake, Canucks management loves. Like, they love Guentzel.
Of course.
Right? He had one of the great individual Stanley Cup playoff runs ever that secured them a Stanley Cup. Like, you don't forget that, especially when that player remains like a 40-goal guy who's also good defensively and on and on. You know, to get held off by the Carolina Hurricanes with that level of ease and then to think about it and be like, okay, we don't have a pick in the first three rounds this year, right? The pick we might make in the first three rounds is a conditional pick that could be a fourth or a third. We don't know yet. We don't have a third in 2025 and we don't have a third in 2026, which is the other part that people need to remember, like, the Canucks literally couldn't have matched the Toffoli deal without putting a condition on a second mm-hmm. round pick. They literally already didn't have the assets to do that trade. So as much as people have sticker shock,
and to be fair, they would have had to do, in all likelihood, a double retention, right? Because Winnipeg only had to do one retention with New Jersey, so you're probably putting in a fourth or a fifth round pick
absolutely
to somewhere else too.
So and then what are we talking about, right? Like, already the Canucks only have 4 picks this year, 6 picks the next year, 5 picks the next year. So you're talking about a team with 15 picks over the next 3 years already, spending 3 draft picks to get Tyler Toffoli. And given the experience with Guentzel this week, I like, again, I don't know this, but I know that the club was already beginning to trend toward this level of thinking, which was, do we have enough to responsibly go in now?
Mm-hmm.
Or, given the age of our team, the stage of our development, the fact that we believe that we can already win if we play to our system, and the fact that we've already taken a big swing, and I'd like consider multiple big swings in here. Right, but we'll get back to this,
because so we'll talk about the I want to do like a power ranking of like coping talking points here depending on what happens. We'll say that later.
I don't think we should be coping.
No, but whatever you are, you know what I mean.
No,
right?
I know, but I'm very serious that I think
that's tongue in cheek.
The wrong way. No, I know,
but
I love the bit.
But because people will say, like, well, they already made Lindholm and Zadorov. That's 100% true, but they already made Hronek and gave up a first round pick. Right?
And a second.
And a second, right? Which takes prospects out of your ammunition for now.
DeSmith.
DeSmith. Lafferty. Right? Go Tanner Pearson. That was for DeSmith. But
Zadorov.
Yeah, Zadorov. So they've already, it's not just Zadorov and Lindholm. It's going back beyond that. They've used assets to build this team already.
Oh yeah. And huge, like we're talking a first, multiple seconds, or sorry, are we talking two firsts? Yeah, we're talking two firsts.
Well,
Lindholm plus Hronek.
Yeah, Lindholm and Hronek.
Two firsts, 2 seconds, multiple third. Like we're talking about a draft class and a half in terms of overall value that this club has already spent on this team. And by the way, I like the returns.
It's worked out really well. But it is worth it, it's an interesting way to frame it, where it's not that they haven't been aggressive. They've been very, very aggressive.
It's just they might not be aggressive at the 11th.
It's just that the aggression has happened previously to the trade deadline, going back as far as a year plus, really, at this point.
And again, I was hearing things tracking this way anyway. But if it's curbed, if the Canucks' appetite to spend more futures has curbed even further than I anticipated, based on my reporting a few days ago, based on this club's desire to add a scoring forward, in the event that the next 110 minutes unfold with relatively little action or just, you know, some single swings as opposed to big deep cuts.
Yep.
I really am going to wonder how much being so far to the outside in bidding for the guy you most wanted shaped the club's thinking that, like, hey, you know, we need to preserve what we've got and do more work to get to the point where this doesn't happen again.
And to, build up the prospect pool to the point where we can potentially do a Carolina-type deal down the road, right? Where we're not, or at least we're in the running, where we can be competitive without it feeling like we're decimating our prospect pipeline by doing it. Another note I wanted to make here was that, so we talked about the Tyler Toffoli, and even matching that might have been a little difficult for the Canucks. Jason Zucker, when that trade happened, in a way, I believe it's a 6th-round pick going from Nashville to Arizona, I was on air with Halford and Brough. We were surprised. Like, that feels like something the Canucks, you know, we've heard their name attached to Jason Zucker. A little surprising they didn't do that. Really important note there. Nashville didn't need Arizona to retain any salary. We know how loath Arizona is to ever spend any money. So the fact that even just for the remainder of this year, they clear all of Zucker's salary off the books, clearly a big deal for them. And that's another player where, you know, the Canucks could have done it, but it would have required double retention. So you're paying probably a significantly higher price to Arizona, given how much they hate to spend money.
He's 5.3.
And then another pick.
He's 5.3?
Yeah.
So double retention doesn't even get it done with Podkolzin assigned. You still would have needed to send, you know, Friedman back or something.
You would have had to do something else on top of it.
I mean, it's, you know, deeply complicated, right? And that's, again, the Canucks have not positioned themselves to maximize flexibility today. Right? They haven't. And that's a conscious decision. This organization has proven itself thoughtful enough that I think we need to, you know, give them that benefit of the doubt. Nothing about this team's, like, at no point have the photon lasers, like, been open, you know, where the other Star Trek captain would be like, oh no, their phasers are set to stun, sir. You know, like, the Canucks have been coming in peace all week. Pretty chill in terms of how they've arrange the decks to, you know, have flexibility today. The Zucker deal, that's a tough break, right? Because that's a player they like.
Yeah, and that's just the simple. And, you know, we talk about what Carolina was able to do because of their prospect system, and that's an example of what a team was able to do on a much lesser scale because of cap space, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's another. It's another type of asset that the Canucks do not have an abundance of right now, in a way that Nashville does, but even team like Carolina, you know, had a lot more usable cap space.
Oh, well, they were able to eat half of Kuznetsov. Just be like, let's see.
Sure.
Let's see what we got.
So I think that's an interesting way of framing it, is not just that the assets to trade were less bountiful for the Canucks, but the cap space situation was a lot tighter for them as well. And look, I'm saying was, but we're still an hour and 45 minutes from the deadline here. So we'll see what transpires.
One thing I've been thinking about a little bit that's fun, and it's been really hammered home for me by the fact that the NHL trade deadline has coincided with the upcoming end of the NFL league year, right? And you've seen all these like liquidations in terms of cuts in the NFL. Meanwhile, there's trades. There's the Vegas Golden Knights, you know, going in to spend $10 million over the cap as usual. There's three-way retentions. I mean, things are getting rather dicey. And I wonder, as we get back into cap growth, if we're going to live in this world that's less shaped by teams being limited by the cap and more by teams being limited only by their own daring and creativity, right? The idea that, like, in the NFL, it's like the cap's just a number and we don't even have to think about it that much or talk about it that much. It's just like, it's part of the discussion as opposed to the all-encompassing lens through which we analyze deals. And I welcome that, Dave.
That would be fantastic if we get to that point.
The idea that in a couple of years we might say stuff like, yeah, but you know, cap space, teams just figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, let's get there. That'd
be
great.
The only thing that's standing in the way, I mean, one, other than the inherent conservatism and lack of creativity from NHL teams, is that unlike in the NFL, where you can kind of do mostly accounting tricks to get around it, right? Yeah, fully guaranteed money, but also like double retention, there's an asset cost. So if you just keep doing it over and over and over again, eventually the cupboard is dry, right? Or the pipeline, the cupboard is bare, I guess. The pipeline runs dry, and there's nothing else to do in terms of using those assets to solve those cap problems. But I do think we've seen a clear trend to teams being way more willing to get creative with those types of deals. Brendan in Nanaimo says, who is the best option for the Canucks out of the remaining wingers available? Maybe Greenway. And I've seen Satyar Shah from Canucks Central here on the station say, you know, the Canucks might be willing to part with more premium assets for a player with term. It's getting really late to do a player with term. Like, that's an inherently complicated deal. I'm not saying they can't pull it off, but the problem with a player with term is it would be so much more expensive to do retention, let alone double retention, right? Because you're asking the team to retain beyond just the end of this year, the final 6 weeks of this year. So that becomes really expensive. So you're basically looking at subtracting from the roster, probably subtracting a guy like Mikheyev, who, look, I know he hasn't scored in forever. It's still a subtraction from your team. Then you got to part with the assets. You got to make it all the cap work and everything. I'm not saying it can't happen, but even for a player like even acquiring a player like Jordan Greenway, who's more of, you know, a middle six toughness guy than somebody who's going to come in and punch up your top six scoring, like even doing that's getting pretty complicated at this late stage, Dranser.
It is. And yeah, I mean, obviously, if you are able to land a really good player who's also on an affordable ticket next season, given how much expiring money you have this or expiring players you have to contend with this summer, that's a win. You know, I still think you can find ways to pull that deal off in 2 hours, because part of what you're doing is acquiring an attractive contract anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I just wonder at this point, you know, you've brought in the big guy from outside in Elias Lindholm.
Mm-hmm.
You had an awkward week. It's been tough. He hasn't necessarily fit. But he actually, we'll get into the game more, I'm sure.
Yeah, we can talk about the game a little next segment.
But
sure.
I do think this trip was an interesting reminder of the floor that we talked about in the Lindholm
mm-hmm.
acquisition, where it's like, you know, did he look like a dynamic scoring threat for a single shift in any of the three games? No. Did he help the Canucks grind out some narrow wins? Did he help the Canucks defensively? Did he give them a sense in some of the most important moments, first period last night and in that second period against LA, where like as the game ground down and became something of a chess match, the Canucks are like winning every draw and it feels dispiriting for the other mm-hmm. team? You know, I thought you saw the floor that he brings, but would you understand if Canucks management looked at, you know, the month plus since they acquired him and sort of started to think like, look, we've got this group. They're going to go into the playoffs and they either win not knowing what they don't know, or they're going to learn, you know? And yeah, we probably don't have the top end horsepower that mm-hmm. like Edmonton can generate with their five best players on the ice, or Colorado can generate with their five best players on the ice. But we think we might have a more complete team. We think we're bigger than the Avs. We think we're better defensively and certainly have better goaltending than the Oilers and on and on. Do it with every other Western Conference team. Like, if we're going to win, it's going to be because we have this group with chemistry that goes in and we're just slightly deeper than everybody else. And if we win, great. We've given ourselves a great shot and we've spent heavily to get here. If we don't, we're going to learn from it, right? And we're going to reset for the next few years. And we're going to be good for the next few years. We're confident we've set that up. In that world, does it make sense as this day unfolds to preserve your assets? And, you know, honestly, maybe Barabanov fits better.
Yep.
Just as like another body with some speed
mm-hmm.
who can kind of play the style of game you want to play with hopefully a little bit of extra offensive punch. I don't hate it. Like, honestly, I don't hate it.
Yeah,
I think mistakes
give you like an option over Phil DiGiuseppe or something, because even with Jordan Greenway, how much how much do you want to bend over backwards to make that happen today, right? Even if it's a player you really like, because, again, it's complicated. One of the ways you can smooth over that complication is overpaying, right? Hey, okay, we're just going to pay whatever it costs to get this done because we really value the player. But are you in a position to do that at this stage before the deadline? I think the other thing on Lindholm.
Who's Greenway a slam dunk upgrade on in the Canucks top six?
In the top six? No one.
Well, and so then what about the third line?
Not when Joshua's back, right? So I mean, I guess you would say you prefer him over Ilya Mikheyev at this point. But like Mikheyev looked really good last night.
Do you?
That's the thing. I don't think it's a slam dunk.
I don't know.
I don't think it's a slam dunk at all.
I do think there's risk. The way I kind of think about these things sometimes is as you get into those seven games against one of the best teams in the league positions, what can happen is everything gets exposed, and I'm not saying that in a negative way, right? It's like the players that can play are going to look like they can play, right? Like sometimes you get sometimes the truth is revealed in a positive sense, right? But also sometimes in a negative. And what can happen as those clashes play out is one team taking the initiative against the other can begin to like play guys out of the lineup, right? It's like we wanted to play one of our best drivers on the third line, but we're losing at the top, so they have to go up.
They have to go up, yeah.
And then, you know, this guy goes onto the third line, but actually he can't hack it. And now we're playing eight guys. And we're double shifting one. And you see it as series go along all the time. And then it becomes about luck for one team. Do we get a bounce? Does the other team make a mistake that we capitalize on? And I sort of think about this Canucks roster and you know, Mikheyev to me is a guy who there's been moments like last night where he looked really good, but it's not consistent for him.
No.
And I don't think we should expect it to be consistent for him given, you know, the seriousness of the surgical procedure he underwent 16 months ago. So, you know, to me, he remains like a could get played down threat. And if that happens, it's probably Lafferty. Like Lafferty was awesome this road trip, by the way, who ends up playing up lineup. And it's like, that's okay if you're trying to grind out a 2-1 win. It's a lot tougher if you're trailing 3-1 going into the third period.
Yeah.
You know, that's sort of where one body, does Barabanov help enough? Is a player like that a needle mover? Probably not the way Toffoli would have been. But you can understand why this is a narrow enough upgrade that the club might have preferred to, you know, keep accumulating.
On the Lindholm discussion, I think there's two things to keep in mind here. One, and people have made this point in the inbox, I don't have it in front of me to credit, but it's come in a couple of times. If Lindholm was still in Calgary and was like the last guy remaining on the board, there would be a lot of hype about whatever team got him, right? Mm-hmm. Because he wouldn't have been under the microscope on this team in the same way for the last month, and there would still be a lot of excitement. And if the Canucks went and got him, there'd be a lot of hype. So it plays into that. They have been aggressive, just not right now. They've already done their aggressive work in the past. And I think the other thing is, and you kind of alluded to this with the idea of the floor case, there's a massive gap between he's not hitting and working out exactly like they envisioned in their mind's eye and they're hoping for, and he's a disaster and he's not going to help them, right? Like there's a big, big gap and a lot of space in between those two poles, and it's entirely possible for him to be underwhelming based on what they were hoped they were going to getting they were going to get for him, but also still helping the team win. And as you said, I think we've seen that as recently as this road trip. Like worst case scenario, you've got an overqualified third line center who wins, draws, and is really reliable defensively. Is that what you wanted to give up that haul for? No, absolutely not. But it's still something that helped your team get better from before you made that deal. And again, that's the floor. And I still think there's a chance that we see more contributions from Elias Lindholm in that respect as well. 650.
Offensively?
Yeah. There's a chance. Of course there is.
Absolutely.
Yeah. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll obviously have the latest, anything that goes down around the NHL, and obviously especially concerning the Vancouver Canucks. Have not done anything on deadline day as of yet. A lot of the targets we've heard they might be interested in are off the board, so we'll see where it goes in the next 90 minutes or so. As a reminder, we're on till 1 today, so we'll take you till after the deadline. I'll do some crossover with Bick probably from 12:30 30-1 as Drancer heads down to Rogers Arena to cover a presser. But lots more coming up. Get your texts in. More trade deadline coverage on the way here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here on a trade deadline day in the NHL. We are live from the Kintech Studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com. Trade deadline day here on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway in Mount Pleasant. Try AJ's traditional New York pizza or sink into their famous Detroit pizza only at AJ's Pizza. Order online at ajs.pizza. And I am currently enjoying some of that traditional New York pepperoni pizza courtesy of AJ's. And it is fantastic. Now, somebody texted in the live stream of Jimmy D. That would be me. That's my nickname. And Thomas eating pizza is the highlight of the trade deadline so far. I'm not aware. Are we live streaming, Dom? Is there video of us going?
No, up? I just checked. I don't know. Someone's hacked the cameras. Someone must have hacked the cameras because I'm looking at the live stream right now. It's dead.
All right.
It's been dead.
So maybe that was just a speculative guess.
Oh, no. You know what happened? I'm just looking at it now. It was still running.
Okay. But you've killed it now.
I've killed it now.
So we were surreptitiously on camera for that first second.
Surreptitiously?
Surreptitiously.
Is that what you put on your pizza?
You don't know what that is?
Surreptitious? You get that at AJ's?
Okay.
Is that the hot honey?
Anyways, I'm glad you...
Yeah, you laugh, Drantz. You laugh at that joke.
The glamour of the radio lifestyle, chomping on pizza while Drantz answers whatever I just pitched to him. Brendan Batchelor is going to join us here momentarily, live from Rogers Arena. So we'll get his thoughts on what some of the Canucks Western Conference rivals have done, what the Canucks might still do, just to kind of give everyone the lay of the land. Somebody texted in like, hey, I'm tuning in to learn about trades. What's going on? Have there been any? No, not in the last half hour. Certainly none of any real significance.
Klim Kostin.
Around the league. There you go. Klim Kostin.
Klim
Big
Kostin.
Trade update.
To the San Jose Sharks cap clearing move for the Detroit Red Wings. What's Yzerman got cooking? I don't know. I can't even do it anymore.
Yeah.
We'll definitely get excited if there's something big.
Don't worry. That's part of the story here is that the Canucks moved with Lindholm a long time ago. Winnipeg got Sean Monahan a long time ago. Hanifin, Gensel, Toffoli, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You go down the list. Jordan Eberle signed an extension. A lot of the big names, if not, I think all of the big names, it's fair to say, have moved at this point. And so, yeah, it's been slow. Look, there will be a flurry of at the bare minimum depth moves at some point here, whether they involve the Canucks or not, in the next 90 minutes. But if you're waiting for kind of an earth-shattering, needle-moving move, it's going to have to be a pretty surprise name at this point.
Deadline week has been really exciting league-wide. Deadline mm-hmm. day feels like it's not necessarily reaching like a fever death, but a sort of, slower one. And that's okay. A lot of teams have gotten what they wanted done. There's still some movement, I'd assume, on the goalie front. Like, surely mm-hmm. there's going to be some movement for in the goalie market that has zero to do with the Canucks, and they're very comfortable with what they've got. So, but the wingers dried up quickly this morning. The last of them got snapped up very fast after Gensel moved, right? And so, I'd imagine there's teams just sort of trying to figure out if there's anything left to do, trying to figure out if there's anything creative or interesting that is out there in the marketplace that they might yet bring home. But, I'm expecting it to be relatively quiet here. The Canucks, I always expected to be somewhat quiet in this final week. And yet, as we've discussed, they've done a lot of work on this roster over the course of the season. They've spent a lot to do it. They got Pettersson locked up a week before the deadline, right? And they got the Lindholm trade done 35 days ago. it hasn't, it's not like it's been a quiet deadline, mm-hmm. even if the final hours are for this team. I think that's important for us to like remember. We got to take have at least a little bit of perspective on that.
Just to run through some of the moves that have happened most recently, as you mentioned, Klim Kostin goes from Detroit to San Jose, potentially indicating Steve Yzerman might have something else up his sleeve there. New York Rangers made a minor acquisition, former Canuck local product Nick Petan, acquiring him from the Minnesota Wild. Jason Zucker goes to Nashville from Arizona, just a sixth-round pick there in return, but no salary retention, the other key piece there.
And one of the goalie dominoes that I expected to fall in my last sort of soliloquy has, hearing traction on Jake Allen to New Jersey, reports Elliot Friedman.
So that's interesting. New Jersey dealing Toffoli, but still in the market for goaltending help as well. That's the latest from Elliot Friedman. Speaking of moves that could presage an additional move happening, the Colorado Avalanche traded Ben Myers to Anaheim, got a fifth-round pick back in return. Of course, Colorado not a seller, so I do wonder if there's any salary cap clearing, roster clearing.
Was Myers
there
on their roster?
I don't know.
I don't think he was.
Honest.
He hasn't been in their lineup. I actually quite like Myers. I think Myers,
he was a big NCAA free agent
he
a
was.
Couple years ago, right?
And he's pretty good. Like, you know, decent size, really good speed. He never earned Bednar's trust, but I tend to not punish a guy whose profile has just about everything because they can't earn the trust of one coach, right? That might be something that another guy can unlock. And if they can, I think there's a middle six guy in there, like a third, decent third liner in there. I think he's got some tools. I actually quite like his game.
But that is one of the interesting storylines here, is the Canucks aren't the only team that have done something but wanted to do more, right? Like Vegas did Mantha and Lindholm, but I mean, Mantha and Hanifin, I should say, but we all saw the protection on the first round pick move in the Hanifin deal. They obviously wanted to keep their options open to make another significant addition. Colorado had extra cap space, and as you pointed out, a first round pick, a really premium asset in Callum Ritchie to potentially move as well. The Rangers, they got Alex Wenberg, but they were in on Gensel. So there are a lot of teams in this position where it just feels like the names that it would be worth spending on have kind of dried up in a hurry here, not just on the Canucks, but on a bunch of other really good teams too.
Well, I also think the high cost of prospects. I mean, we have not seen, like, we may get through the deadline.
Yeah, who's the best prospect that's moved?
Koivunen or whatever his name is, from Carolina to Pittsburgh. And honestly, second might be Hunter Brustevich.
Mm-hmm.
It's Brustevich or the other Russian Carolina prospect who they moved. Man, teams have held fast. Like, teams are willing to pay. Teams are preferring to pay in cash, right? Draft picks, you can get.
Yep.
Top prospects, very, very difficult, which I think is what put the Penguins in something of a bind,
well,
given
that's
their unique consideration set.
And as much as Kyle Dubas was saying, we want to go quality over quantity, you know, it takes two to tango. And what we've seen, and this isn't just a this-year trend, this is a multi-year trend. The days of, you know, Jerome McGinley for Joe Nieuwendyk, those are probably over, right? Because teams are just so reluctant to Philip Forsberg, right, going in a deadline deal.
For Martin Irad.
For Martin Irad, of all players. At least the McGinley for Nieuwendyk one worked out for all involved. But teams are just so reluctant to part with the guys at the top of their system, right? So, you know, Gabe Perreault from the Rangers, mm-hmm. not moving for Jake Gensel. A bunch of guys from Carolina that probably weren't on the table in any meaningful sense. It's if that's where you're going to set your sights as a selling team, you're probably going to have to be ready to strike out because teams just don't part with those guys anymore.
The cap system has made the reward of netting a contributor on an ELC so high, right? That even the marginal... Even though the marginal value of upgrading a top 10 team at the deadline is through the roof, right, relative to the immortal potential of helping you win a Stanley Cup, teams are still really focused on not losing out on those affordable labor years if they can find them, because those are the years that the chance that you're able to land a guy who's like an impact guy, maybe even a top six guy, top of the lineup guy, at less than $1 million, like, that's the whole ballgame. There's no way to lock up that much upside for that little, that much cap benefit for that little, outside of having a young guy hit. And teams are protective of it for a reason.
All right. We now go live to Rogers Arena, where we are joined by the play-by-play voice of the Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650, our guy, Brendan Batchelor. Batch, what's going on, man?
Not a whole lot. It's pretty quiet down here so far.
You keeping busy?
I am standing, looking out the window across the street at Costco right now. And it looks like the lineup for hot dogs isn't very long, if anybody is wondering.
So that's
the late breaking trade news that I can give you from here.
Is that a coded Phil
Lots
Kessel
of
message of some sort, Batch?
Pardon?
Is that like a coded Phil Kessel update of some sort?
I don't know. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. You decide, Jake.
So what do you make? I mean, look, we'll see what happens here in the next hour plus before the deadline. But obviously, a lot of the premier names, the names we've heard in connection with the Canucks, have moved or are staying put. In the case of Jordan Eberle in Seattle, maybe Pavel Buchnevich in St. Louis as well. If nothing major transpires here in the next hour, what will your reaction be to a relatively quiet deadline day for the Vancouver Canucks?
Well, there's a couple of things. I think, first of all, I think the salary cap might be a little bit prohibitive for them here, where, you know, we see Jason Zucker move for a late round pick, but for the Canucks in their cap situation, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, but to make those sorts of moves, they either need to move some money out or need to have retained salary or need to move money through a third team to make some of those things work. And when you get into the final hours before the deadline, those things become a little bit more complicated to pull together at the drop of a hat. So, you know, you see Toffoli go. The price on that was lower than I was expecting, but I know that the value of some of those picks may not compare to some of the picks that the Canucks are able to, offer with what they've already moved out. So that's kind of how I look at maybe their inability to be involved in some of these trades that we've seen thus far. The other thing I would say is I know fans are going to be disappointed if they don't do much in the next hour or so. And I kind of liken it to, like, imagine Christmas morning. You're so excited. You're ready to open a present. You run downstairs and there's no big presents for you under the tree. And you turn around to your parents and they're like, oh yeah, remember we got you that bike last month and we told you that would be your Christmas present. So yeah, there might be a few little stocking stuffers and complimentary things, but you already got the bike in this, you know, analogy. The bike is Elias Lindholm. And you've already made that acquisition and we've already given you the big Christmas gift. So you don't get it on Christmas morning. And even though you know that you got a Christmas present, it feels a little bit hollow because you were looking forward to opening something on Christmas morning. So that's kind of how I would characterize this deadline. If they're not able to do much, I would also say that some of the best moves we've seen at the deadline in Canucks history and for other teams have been smaller complementary moves. Like, think about Max Lapierre, think about Chris Higgins. Neither of those acquisitions were considered big home run trades, and yet they ended up being huge for that team in 2011 throughout the playoff run. So just because they didn't make a big splash, just because they didn't go and get Gensel or Eberle or Toffoli or someone like that, doesn't make this deadline a failure, and the Canucks are still a legitimate contender at this point, which I think is the most exciting thing, regardless of whether they're able to meaningfully add prior to the deadline or not.
So what do you say to this Canucks fan whose Christmas dreams you've just crushed, right? your fictional child in this situation, Batch, where when they then turn around to you and go, I'd be more excited about the bike if you hadn't turned around and tried to sell it already.
Yeah, you put it on Kijiji already, but it didn't have any takers.
Like, wow, thanks.
Well, you know what? Maybe it was a limited edition bike and, you know, the values on Marketplace are increased, right? Like, who knows? But there might have been a better bike available for you out there, and you can't have two bikes, can you? So, yes, and you know, speaking specifically to the Canucks situation, because the Lindholm acquisition hasn't been a home run in terms of on-ice results yet, I think that probably colors part of this. At the same time, that was part of the reason why Jim Rutherford and Patrick Alvin jumped the market and went out and got Lindholm as early as they did. So you have time to go through the growing pains and figure out what his role is going to be. And I firmly believe that the best of Elias Lindholm in Canuck colors is still to come. So right now, it might feel a little hollow. It might feel like, you know, the bike you got isn't quite as nice and shiny as you thought it was, but give it a little time and it might stand you in good stead going forward.
Well, and I think the other part here is, and we'll see how far we can extend this metaphor, right, is that all the other kids in the neighborhood are opening their big presents today, right, and sharing pictures with you and all of that. But to be fair, like, we don't know how much Adam Henrique is actually going to move the needle in Edmonton. You know, we don't know how much Noah Hanifin or Anthony Mantha are going to perform in Vegas. I'm not saying they won't. It's just the shine has already had time to come off for Elias Lindholm.
I'm comfortable saying they won't.
Sure. All right. There you go. Hot take. Whereas, right, if the Canucks were doing Lindholm today and those teams had already made those moves a month ago and maybe they weren't working out, the optics of the situation would be completely different. Having said that, you know, seeing other teams in the Western Conference be pretty active, you know, pretty much all the other contenders, with the exception of the Kings, I guess, being pretty active, do you still see a Canucks team that can hang with the other heavyweights come playoff time in the Western Conference?
Yeah, I do. I think a good example was last night against Vegas. And, you know, I guess it remains to be seen if Vegas will magically get Mark Stone back for game one and do the usual cap gymnastics and LTIR stuff that they've done. But, you know, this is a team that has been at the top of the Western Conference for the majority of this season with the group that they have and the players that are already in that locker room. And I know they've gone through a bit of a stumble, you know, in the last few weeks, but we're starting to see them come out of that. And I think the last couple of games in particular, big wins against other teams that are these clubs that we're talking about that, you know, are in the same conversation as them in the Western Conference, including Vegas with their new two additions in the lineup last night. And the Canucks look like the better team to me throughout, basically, shows that this is a team that, you know, has already made its moves. And maybe they'll make some complimentary moves. You know, it's Jim Rutherford. Maybe he'll surprise us here in the next hour. But, you know, if you look at the season as a totality and you talk about bringing in Nikita Zadorov and Elias Lindholm and you know, complimenting both your back end and your top six on top of the fact that they've essentially overhauled the blue line in the last year and a half, and their top players are all taking their games to the next level, I still think the Canucks are a legitimate heavyweight in the Western Conference, and I don't think that any of these moves that other teams have made change that. Now, are they the favorite in the Western Conference? Maybe not. Like, I really like what Colorado's done over the last couple of days, but at the same time, if you're a Canucks fan, assuming things progress as they are right now, Colorado's not a problem for you till the Western Conference final. And I think we can all agree that if the Canucks are in the Western Conference final, based on the expectations coming into this season, that would be considered a massive success. Now, you want to win a Stanley Cup, so that's not necessarily going to ease your mind about what some of these other teams are doing. And I think it's also worth noting that oftentimes in recent seasons, the teams that make the biggest moves at the deadline do not ultimately end up having success in the postseason. And oftentimes it's teams that tweak around the edges, feel confident with the group that they have, maybe make some depth moves or some complementary moves, but continue to roll with the players that have carried them all season long that ultimately have success. So, you know, this is not going to make the Canuck fan listening to us feel any better when they wanted a big splash like Jake Gensel or something like that. But, you know, the Canucks are still a Stanley Cup contender in my mind, and whether they do anything today or not doesn't change that.
Are we sure Vegas is
a Stanley Cup contender?
Are we sure that team is good?
No, I don't think. I mean, they had the tremendous start to the season, but they're what, a 500 hockey team?
Yeah, that was all smoke and mirrors, though. And yeah, they're sub 500. I mean, they're fake NHL 500, but they're sub real 500.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't it nice, by the way, that we graduated from my 500 absolutism to my point percentage absolutism this season?
I don't know if nice is the word I would use, but I guess it's different.
Well, it's the same. It's just much better for the Canucks.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry, Batch, go.
Yeah, well, Vegas is interesting because I agree, but at the same time, if they were fully healthy with all of the guys that they had out of the lineup last night available to them, I still think they're a mean piece of business. And this just isn't Mark Stone. It's guys further down their lineup that are out right now. Like, the fourth line that they iced last night resembles nothing close to the fourth line that they were able to put out there in the playoffs last year, or really for the majority of their time in the NHL. You know, off the top of my head, I think Carrier's out of the lineup right now. He's a good depth player for them. And there's a couple of others that are escaping me at the moment. So a fully healthy Vegas, yes, I still think they could be. They've just had some issues with consistency and with staying healthy throughout this season. And, you know, their top players need to be better. I didn't think Eichel was very good in the game last night. So I'm not willing to rule the defending Stanley Cup champions out, but I do think that maybe they aren't at the level that many of us thought they would be or should be after that start to the season. And, you know, it's a one-game sample size. It'll be interesting to see how Mantha and Hanifin ultimately fit in with them and if that kind of pushes them forward. But, you know, I'm here for the conversation anyway that they may not be one of those Stanley Cup contenders that we talk about.
If Vancouver had played the way that they've played for the last nine games and then lost like that on home ice to a team, even to a team like Vegas or LA or Edmonton, people would have some mean things to say about this team. People would be freaking out, like panicking. And the only reason we're not doing the same about Vegas is that they won last year, so we're giving them the benefit of the doubt. We probably should. Like, I think that's fair. There's a real chance that they're the big bad wolf just taking a snooze. But, man, I don't know how you watch that team and think they've got it if their effort level is at that level. Like, they got outworked all over the ice. That was brutal.
Yeah, the one thing I'll say, though, is that we have seen teams that have had playoff success understand when they need to turn it on and when they don't. And, you know, that's not something that, you know, the average hockey fan probably wants to hear, because you'd like to believe that every player is giving it 110% every night when they step out there. But Vegas has won a cup. We've seen Tampa Bay do this too, where,
but they were 2-5, Batch. Like, they were losing a ton of games. They just lost two games to some of the worst teams in the league, and the division leaders come into town. You know what I mean? Like, and now you're in a fight for your playoff lives, and they no-showed. Like, they no-showed last night.
Yeah, no, I agree. So what I'm getting to is to say that it's maybe a little bit more concerning than that, but you're right, because of the heavyweight history, because they won the Stanley Cup, because we've seen them do great things. And again, it's not the exact same team as last year. As I said, especially with the injuries right now, their depth in the forward group is depleted down their lineup. But I'm never going to rule that team out just because of what they are capable of. But if I was a Golden Knights fan, there would be some concern there for sure.
Batch, thanks for doing this, man. Keep an eye on that Costco hot dog line. If anything changes, you let us know, all right?
Yeah, I'll see if Phil runs down here at some point.
Get your binoculars out. Do the stakeout. Yeah, let us know.
I'll be watching. You guys can call at any point if you hear any reports about anything, really. So, hot dog line or otherwise.
I actually heard that the Grinch snuck into my house and stole my bike for Christmas.
Yeah, a lot of people had thoughts on that Christmas analogy, including like, oh, I wouldn't want to be Batch's family on Christmas. Sounds like a tough time.
Hey, it's just an analogy.
Lumps of coal for you, good friend. Cheers.
Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
That is Brendan Batchelor.
My Athletic colleague Chris Johnson reporting that the Flyers are sending a 2024 fourth round pick to Buffalo for Eric Johnson.
All right, I got a bunch of trades to run through here. The trade desk is brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress. As you said, Philly acquiring Eric Johnson from Buffalo. Another Philadelphia deal. They trade Wade Allison forward. Played 60 games for them last year, was in the AHL this year.
I got some time for Wade Allison.
He's going to Nashville. Denis Gurianov going the other way. Nashville just collecting all of the like mid-wingers today. And going back to Anthony Beauvillier. Who else did they get? Zucker and now Wade Allison. So they are loading up on wingers. Okay, yeah, that's a winger.
Jamie, speaking of mid-wingers, as the resident Tatar insider on Sportsnet 650, I have a scoop, actually.
Okay.
Seattle Kraken unlikely to trade Thomas Tatar by end of day. They are still hoping to have some semblance of a roster.
Your dreams are
as
dashed.
They continue to try and fight for the last.
Sorry, is this
spot.
Like original Dom Shermetti
yes.
reporting?
Yeah. I looked into it.
Did you actually?
Yes. I told you I'm invested in Thomas Tatar. I wanted him on the Canucks so bad.
I really just thought you were relaying something from another reporter. This is original Dom intel.
Yes.
I am stunned. Good job, man. Good job on trade deadline.
I'm,
the whole
I'm
crew
sad.
Could we fairly say that Dom has brought the tartar sauce?
Absolutely, he has. No doubt about it. The tartar tea.
Yeah.
No Slovak in Vancouver at the trade deadline. Well, I mean, there might be another one out there, but not Tomas Tatar. Anyways, okay, another trade. Jake Allen, I mentioned this. It's official now. Jake Allen going to New Jersey for Montreal for a conditional third. Could become a second,
wow,
depending on games played. 50% retained there from Montreal as well, which is significant because that contract runs through next year. So New Jersey paying to get Jake Allen at 50% of his salary for next year.
So that's pretty good because that's what? 1.4.
Yeah. So that's 1. Like backup, 5. Back, totally reasonable backup, yeah, money. And I don't think it takes them out of
the
bigger market for goalies in the
bigger
summer
Markstrom
either.
Market.
Yes, the bigger Markstrom market. So there's your roundup. Some minor moves happening around the NHL.
Some bips and bops.
1 hour to go here. We'll see what the Canucks do, what else transpires around the league.
On the other side of the break, we will be like that guy in the meme, poking a dead body with a,
yep,
stick and saying,
hoping that something happens,
and yelling, do something.
Maybe we'll give Batch a call again. Hey, anything changed, buddy?
Steal
what's up?
Any children's Christmas presents?
You want to talk some more? All right, more trade deadline coverage coming up here on Sportsnet 650.
Big opinions and good bets. It's the People's Show with Bick Nizar. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, special trade deadline day edition of the show, part of wall-to-wall coverage here on Sportsnet 650. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Trade Desk is brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress, the Lower Mainland's favorite furniture and mattress destination. Visit Jags showrooms in Langley, Abbotsford, and soon to open Coquitlam, or online at jagsfurniture.ca. We do have another trade to announce. Andrew Peak, defenseman from Columbus, another name that we've heard in connection to the Canucks once or twice before. He's going to Boston. Don't have the return on that yet, but that's per Elliot Friedman. So that is the latest here, with officially less than an hour to go before the NHL's trade deadline.
And
Boston, one of those teams.
The return is in. It's Jacob Zboril.
Oh, Jacob Zboril. All right. There you go.
One for one.
What a trade. One for one. Nothing like a good old-fashioned hockey trade.
Nothing like a good old-fashioned
mid-off
trade. Yeah, oh, yeah. That's the mid-off. Oh, Bjornfot claimed by Florida.
Ooh.
Ottawa claims Boris Tkachuk.
Some waiver move.
The news is starting to heat up.
This hot stove is hot. Red hot.
His hot stove is... Turn the dial to 3. The hot stove is going.
Also, the Ducks claimed William...
Medium low.
Lagesson.
Lagesson, yeah.
Lagesson, yeah, from the Leafs. So three players.
Sorry, who did?
The Ducks.
Lagesson can play.
Three players claimed on deadline day off of waivers. Thrilling stuff here.
Well, and I think there you go. The Canucks were unwilling to risk losing Mark Friedman and Neil Zaman,
mm-hmm,
and I think made the determination that even with the contract that Zaman had, 2 years one way, he wouldn't make it through. And given all the activity there, I think that was probably right. I mean, that looks like a sage evaluation of how risky the waiver wire would be to use at this time of year from Canucks management. Nice change from the Gadjevich days.
Our resident Tomas Tatar insider, Dom Shermati, who, by the way, very like professional, high level of journalistic ethics, would not reveal his sources to
you
us.
You were busting my
during
chops
the break.
The break.
Wouldn't even, I asked, like, give us the type of industry. Is it team or media? And nope, not seeing anything. So anyways, Dom wants to throw a name at us.
Justin Schultz, what do you think for the Canucks?
Big fan.
Yeah.
Now, things ended in a complicated way with Schultz and Rutherford, right?
Is the ticket too big, though, to justify? Like, would he slot in to your immediately? You know what I mean? Or would he be seventh defenseman? And is the ticket too big to be seventh defenseman?
I think he'd play over Juulsen.
Sure, but when Myers is healthy, then he has to play over one of Myers, Zadorov, Cole.
Yeah, I think he'd play over.
All right.
I think he'd play over Cole at this point, probably.
Probably, yeah.
When you say complicated, you mean like toxic relationship complicated?
No, like, so
it's complicated on Facebook.
No, I mean, yes, kind of, but like not. You know, I wouldn't use a word as heavy as toxic. Otherwise, I would have said that as opposed to something like complicated. Justin Schultz, when the Penguins got summarily dismissed by the Montreal Canadiens from the bubble in the play-in series, and it was a shock. Right? Like the Montreal Canadiens executives, because remember it was a French-Canadian kid, Lafreniere, who was going to be the first overall pick. Every team that lost in the play-in was going to go into the lottery with equal odds. Like, Montreal Canadiens management showed up in the bubble joking to rival execs like, we're the only bunch of executives getting fired if we win the play-in. And then they won the play-in. Summarily dispatched the Penguins. And at the time, the Pittsburgh market's like favorite Eric Goodbranson style whipping boy on the Penguins was Jack Johnson. And that pair got crushed, like -6 across the 3 or 4 games that they played. And, you know, it was put to Rutherford that Jack Johnson had played terribly. And Johnson was like, and Rutherford was like, you know, classic Frank Rutherford, right? Was like, well, his name's Jim, but he was being Frank. Said, oh, it was really Schultz we needed more from, right? And there was always sort of a give and take there, right? Mm-hmm. In that Schultz can be a frustrating player, especially in his earlier days in terms of some of the defensive stuff. End of the day, Schultz is like really good size, really good puck moving, played awesome for the Kraken in the playoffs last year. You'd have to check, but if he wasn't point per game, he was real close from the back end. He's obviously won 2 cups. He had a nice run there with the Capitals for a few years. And look, I mean, in a world where you were without Filip Hronek for a game or two, I think you'd get a lot of the same results if you put Justin Schultz with Quinn Hughes. Like, I think at the very least, Justin Schultz would leap above the Ethan Bear bar for, like, puck mover who continues to give you the same two-way effect that a puck mover like Hronek gives you with Hughes, although obviously you wouldn't get as much as you get from Hronek. Additionally, I think he'd help this team break the forecheck a ton. Like, if you're telling me this team has a chance to do something like Soucy, Myers, Zadorov, Schultz, I think that's an upgrade over what they have at the moment.
Did you get that from your Seattle contact, Dom? Justin Schultz, should we be reading between the lines here with our new resident insider?
No, Cam was texting me.
So Justin Schultz, $3 million, does have a 10-team no trade, although it's a short move from Seattle, familiarity with the front office and Rick Tocchet. I mean, I don't know if that would be an obstacle.
And a Kelowna guy.
And a Kelowna guy. So, you know, you figure you can probably work around that. $3 million. So, again, it's not necessarily easy even at this point to do a $3 million salary, although with double retention, if you're willing to do that, you could still probably get that one done.
Oh, easily. $750K. Also, only an hour now for the Canucks to sign Phil Kessel, which
that's
is
another
something
thing
we
that
gotta
we're
watch
tracking
here,
right? Yeah. And I think it was Rick Dhaliwal and Halford and Brough saying it's going to come right down to the wire, and it's going to, like, do they, I guess it's kind of what we talked about as soon as the Phil Kessel reports happened and he came to Abbotsford to start working out is, the biggest issue is the opportunity cost, right? And the fact that it's not done yet suggests to me that the Canucks are trying to keep their options open to the very last moment in case something like a Justin Schultz does present itself or another forward, like an Alex Barabanov or something like that, like trying to keep their options open and then almost as a last resort do Phil Kessel at the last minute if they can, if there's no other use for their cap space at that point.
I don't know. Like, I continued to be told that the club hadn't made a decision, I started to get more and more skeptical that the team was actually going to do this, you know, over the course of this week. We'll see. I mean, we're now at the 11th hour. The fact that it's not done you know, is fascinating to me. And I do sort of wonder if there's some kind of negotiation about exactly how it would work, right? Because surely it's not about money, right? Surely everyone,
you wouldn't think so.
Everyone knows roughly what the, I mean, paint by numbers between 775K and 850K, 1 year deal. But there could be a disagreement about, okay, you know, I don't want to go on waivers. I just want to do a conditioning loan, stay on the NHL roster. And you could see the club being like, no, we want to see what you can do in the A, you know, and there being a material, like I could see it being something like that. But otherwise, it's really confusing to me that he would have spent 5 days short of a month in Vancouver and not end up signed. Like, it's really hard to figure out.
It seems a little odd. It definitely seems a little odd, unless there's another shoe to drop of some sort, right? And look, I have no doubt that as much as they haven't done anything yet and a lot of targets have dried up, that the Canucks are still working the phones, trying to make something happen out there. And, you know, they've still got 59 minutes and change to do so out there. Okay, while we wait for more trades to trickle in here and a Phil Kessel update, see what else happens around the league. The game last night, Canucks win 3-1, their third win in a row, three wins on that mini three-game road trip as they come back now for nine in a row to play out the rest of March. We talked about it a little bit from the Vegas side of things, right, that they did not look. I thought it was actually kind of a microcosm of their whole season where there were flashes, but just so limited flashes. And then when you look at the whole picture, it was just a very underwhelming performance from the Vegas Golden Knights. How much do you credit the Canucks? How much do you kind of assign blame to the Golden Knights for the result last night?
Oh, I credit the Canucks, but I also assign a lot of blame to the Golden Knights. You know what I mean?
I think it's a classic, like, you know, I know Bruff was getting roasted on Twitter a little bit for saying like the Vegas was bad.
Well,
it doesn't mean the Canucks were lucky or
anything.
That's
sensitive, in my opinion. Like, come on, you have to know, like, there are going to be games where the Canucks defeat a team that's like thrown everything at them and they still emerge victorious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's great. That still counts for 2 points when you crush a team that like started the game undisciplined, never got going offensively, and was like soundly outworked for 40 minutes and then just outplayed for 20. You know, I still think there was a ton of impressive stuff the Canucks did. They got their big power play goal, right?
Yep.
I thought they attacked really sharply against the grain. Like, when they went up, they were able to press that advantage. They had better chances than Vegas, even as Vegas was the team that you'd expect to begin to tilt the ice in their favor. And then they completely shut down their attack in the third period. You know, there's a lot of things that the Canucks deserve a ton of credit for. It doesn't change the fact that I'm watching that game thinking, oh boy, like I understand watching this why Vegas has dropped 5 of 7. Like, I'm worried that the Kraken could outpace them over the balance of the season.
Yeah.
I am.
I was
worried about that going into the game last night.
I've been joking about it, but it's absolutely on the table.
You've been joking about it, but I've been serious.
Yeah, you've been dead serious.
And I've seen, like, they're going to need to get this going. Like, Mantha.
Well, heck, Calgary won last night.
Yeah.
Calgary's exact same points percentage, same record, or at least same points in as many games as Seattle.
You know how I feel about Calgary, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, Calgary and Seattle are both in the range where it only takes, like, a couple of weird things to happen for Vegas to be in serious trouble at this point.
Yeah.
6 points back, each team has a game in hand. Vegas is reeling. Those other teams playing pretty decent hockey right now. Like, that, it's not, like, Vegas is still the heavy favorite. But again, we're like, another injury, a couple bad bounces, you know, the head-to-head matchups that Seattle has with them. We're in that zone now where it only takes a couple of kind of coin flips to come up against you, and you're in a lot of trouble if you're Vegas.
They should absolutely be feeling the heat. They need to get going. They need to get going, or they're going to miss. I don't know what else to say.
I think it also.
What did you think of their acquisitions, by the way? Like, I liked the Hanifin fit for them.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he was able to get them moving from the back end in a way. You know, a lot of their D are relying on like take the hit to make the play, and Hanifin, I thought, gave them some actual push from the back end. It was like the one thing I thought they did pretty well was move the puck last night. But Anthony Mantha, man, I'm not a big fan of that acquisition for them, and I felt like last night was just reinforced it. Like, I just don't know that there's enough disciplined decision making to really fit in with what they do well.
Also, it does kind of shed some light, maybe, the fact that their biggest deadline deal was not a rental, right? It was a sign and trade for Noah Hanifin. That as much as they are always aggressive, and they went out and got Mantha, they didn't make a big just this year move. They made a big future move, right? And I wonder how much of that is them recognizing this might not be our year.
Some minor Canucks news, as the Canucks have assigned Vasily Podkolzin back below the line. Podkolzin obviously will want to be, they'll paper him down today anyway. This was always going to happen. The question is whether or not that's part of a sequence that permits them to add a player in the 45 minutes remaining ahead of the deadline. With Podkolzin down, there's something like 1.1, 1.2 million in cap flexibility. You know, with double retention, you can get a relatively large salary onto the books for that. Mm-hmm. So will be interesting to see how the last 45 minutes unfold and whether or not the Canucks actually make a move here.
So that could be Phil Kessel, right? That could be opening up space for Phil Kessel, or that could be a more external option as well. But yeah, Vasily Podkolzin assigned to Abbotsford. And just for the record, he's already met the requirements to be eligible for the AHL playoffs, right? So it's not as if they're doing it.
No, they
for
do
that
have
reason.
To paper him down.
Oh, today they have to. Okay.
He has to go down today.
So it could be as simple as that.
Yeah,
or it could
be as simple as that,
else.
Or it could be a cap clearing move to do something.
All right. Another little bit of kind of indirect Vancouver news. Tyler Toffoli sounds like he will not be available for the Jets when they come to play the Canucks tomorrow. So if you are having flashbacks to the North Division season and Tyler Toffoli returning to Rogers Arena and torturing the Canucks, at least it will not be the case tomorrow night. Sounds like he'll meet up with the team. This is per John Liu in Winnipeg on Monday when they play the Capitals in Winnipeg. Not a lot else happening out there right now, as we have just under 45 minutes to go to the NHL trade deadline. This text comes in. Would it be better to play a sliding and weakened Vegas Golden Knights in the first round or a surging Seattle or Calgary? I still want no part of the Golden Knights. They're the pedigree, the talent, the history of winning in the playoffs, that still is enough. As weakened as they look right now, potentially getting Mark Stone back, all of that concerns me. I would way rather play Seattle or Calgary, either one, than have to go up against. First of all, I think it would be great, like, storyline matchups. I mean, obviously, especially with Calgary, the Andre Kuzmenko revenge series, but also the I-5 rivalry kind of hasn't developed yet with Seattle. I think that would be exciting. I also think it would be a way more favorable matchup for the Canucks than Vegas would.
Calgary or Seattle?
Either one.
Well, Calgary for sure.
Seattle 100% too.
Not 100%, because Seattle has been far better than Vegas for like 4 months here. It's not a pedigree league. It's a win the game on the ice league, right? Like, at some point, it's not about what you've done. It's about what you're able to do. The Kraken, at the very least, have a high enough level defensively that they can make it a coin flip. You know what I mean? Like, the Flames, I think the Canucks beat very soundly. 5 games. I'd probably pick the Canucks to win in 5 if they faced Calgary. If they faced Vegas, man, I'd really agonize over it. And if they picked Seattle, I'd probably pick Vancouver, but I'd pick them in 7. Just because I think the Kraken are good enough as a defensive unit that they're just going to be able to turn the series into one that's like 4 games decided by a goal, and that's the type of series that can go either way.
Yeah. By the way, people texting in, did you guys just say Hanifin extended in Vegas? Somebody else. There wasn't a side and trade with Hanifin, was there? We're getting tripped up again by the Kevin Weeks.
Yeah.
Where he
Kevin
made
Weeks
it seem
reported.
Like... Kevin Weeks has reported that signs indicate that there could be an 8-year, $7 million AAV extension. Not official yet. But again, those numbers out there from Kevin Weeks yesterday. So we'll see. Maybe it doesn't materialize. But that's what I was basing that idea on, that it wasn't a pure rental for the Vegas Golden Knights in that one. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one comes in unsigned. I think I'm okay with standing pat. Canucks did make moves, just not at the last minute. Shows restraint and big picture thinking, which was absent with the last regime. Another text comes in on the other side. What excuse is Jim or Patrick going to give for absolutely doing nothing at the trade deadline? Well, I don't know if I would characterize it as an excuse, because, again, I do think the argument that they've made trades, just not in this last span of 48 or 72 hours, like, that's valid. That's 100% true. They did do a big deadline acquisition. It just happened 6 weeks before the trade deadline, and the shine has had a time to wear off a little bit on Elias Lindholm. But you can't say that they stood pat with this team. At the deadline, yes, pending what happens here in the next 40 minutes. Overall, no, absolutely not. They have aggressively tried to improve this team. And I guess the question comes down to, do you think this team has what it takes to go up against Edmonton, go up against Winnipeg, go up against LA, Vegas, if they turn things around, Dallas? And I think the answer for management would be, yeah, we do think we have what it takes. We do think we can do that with the roster we currently have, if we stay healthy, if things go right for us. They believe in their ability to take on those teams and go deep.
They definitely do. They definitely do, provided that they do the right things, provided that they play the way that got them here. And, you know, one thing I began to sense over the course of this week, too, was, you know, and this is that ineffable stuff, right? This is that Jim Rutherford's been around a long time. And, you know, there's as much as Rutherford is like a hardened, practical hockey executive, right? There's two other elements that old school general managers of his era, and he's the most successful iteration of it, also have. One is like the P.T. Barnum showmanship angle. We saw that when he tipped a trade on Toronto radio earlier this year. We see it occasionally, you know, when he speaks to the public. And the other is like a little bit of Christopher Lloyd in Back to the Future, a little bit of mad scientist, right? And what I mean here is, part of the determination you have to make is, what type of team do you have, right? And I really do think this is something that has been interesting to me as I've kind of tried to get a sense of where the Canucks are at leading into the deadline. Is, you know, for the first time about a week ago, I started to get the sense that at least there was an argument internally that, like, with the team as it's built now, having not been playoff tested previously, but being at such a high level as a group, that maybe this is the sort of team that can go into the playoffs and almost like punch above their weight because they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
And if they have to learn it by losing, so be it. And there might be a sense, if you've got one of those teams that profiles like that, like, do you want to bring in another guy who's been there before, who already knows? You know, or do you want to keep the sort of momentum, the natural enthusiasm, the natural, like, why not us vibe that this team has already built, and just sort of keep that intact as you go into the first sort of major playoff run as a credible contender that this core group will have had as a unit.
I do think, and we've kind of gone back and forth on this, right? The idea of how much does the Pettersson extension change your plans at the deadline? And I don't think it has
to be.
I don't think it has to be a massive shift, but
how
can it be
not?
Can it be like a tiebreaker, right? You know what I mean? Where it's, now you know you're going to have the bones of this team back next year. The core of this team, possibly excluding Filip Hronek, if you want to put him in there, although every possibility that he's here, he's back here as well. You know you're going to have that in place for not just next year, but the year after that. Demko expires then, but, you know, you still have Hughes, Miller, Pettersson under contract. I think if there was uncertainty about Petey still, or if you thought it was trending in a certain direction, I could easily see them saying, you know what? Yeah, that's a lot for Toffoli, but this is our chance and he moves the needle. We have to go for it. I think it just becomes a very different conversation when you have confidence in maybe not having this type of dream season, but at least being in the playoff mix with this core going forward, going into next year, and keeping your powder dry for the offseason, seeing what plays out there. And as you said, kind of letting this team try to keep this momentum going, try to learn some of those lessons going into next season. I think it becomes a lot easier internally to kind of sell yourself on standing pat once you have the certainty of Elias Pettersson. I do think it removes a lot of the urgency to really push truly, truly all in, despite the fact that they've already done a lot of work earlier this year. All right, there is 35 minutes to go here before the NHL trade deadline.
Do you know where your Frank Vatrano is?
I think he's still going to be in Anaheim.
Do you know, though, Pat?
We'll
Do you
see.
Know where he is?
We'll see. What will happen? We'll find out. And of course, the annual caveat of trades trickle in after the deadline as well. So we'll see. But 35 minutes to go here before the NHL trade deadline. We have you covered to the deadline and beyond.
I'm trying to use every ounce of self-control I have to not yell into the mic. It's trickle-in season.
It is so trickle-in season. Well, in 35 minutes, then it's trickle-in season. Sure. Then it's like peak trickle-in season for about 5 minutes before we get the Murph, Canucks are done for today tweet.
Peak trickle-in, huh?
Peak trickle-in. That's right. All right. Final push to the trade deadline coming up next year on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Trade Deadline Day in the NHL. 28 minutes and counting here to go to the official NHL trade deadline. Quiet day so far for the Vancouver Canucks. I'm Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here as well. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center or Arbutus in Vancouver online at DunbarLumber.com.
We have particulars in the Andrew Peak deal.
Great.
From Siege. It's a 2027 third round pick in addition to Jakub Zboril for Andrew Peak.
All right. Kevin Weeks just tweeted the eyeball emoji at the Golden Knights Twitter account, followed by the ticking clock emoji. So there you go.
Maybe that's
Golden,
where we are, eh?
Maybe the Vegas Golden Knights working on something else per Kevin Weeks. Although the last time yesterday, Vegas tweeted the eyeball emojis, and it was some stupid brand
corporate
partnership.
Yeah.
Are they going to try and get St. Louis to throw the book at them? The booch?
The booch?
At them?
I mean, that's the... Now, you said it was your athletic colleague in St. Louis, whose name escapes me at the moment.
Jeremy Rutherford.
The other J. Rutherford.
Yes, I know. And I'm like, is it really Jeremy Rutherford? That sounds too similar to Jim Rutherford.
I mix it up a lot. Jeremy Rutherford, though, by the way, best dude.
All right.
Best dude. Anyway, no, he reported that they...
Unlikely to move Buchnevich, correct?
Yeah, that he was trending towards staying.
But... No, never say never, and who knows?
All it takes is one phone call to change things.
That's
he said,
right.
But the sense he had is that Buchnevich will remain with the Blues.
So we're not only are
that's not definitive.
Not only are we nearing trickle in season, but we're also in one phone call season here, very very much as well. So we'll see. Maybe Vegas is picking up the phone and making that one phone call and making an offer that St. Louis has to consider.
The Andrew Peak thing, by the way, you just know this guy. Who has tweener written all over him and has never really succeeded.
Is going to be amazing in Boston.
He's going to crush it. This is like Connor Clifton, man. I was so sure Connor Clifton was like the steal of free agency. But you take a guy out of Boston who's just a guy.
Yep.
And they're just a guy.
Well, look, if Andrew Peak can crush the Leafs' hopes in the first round, I have no problem with that.
That would be peak Bruins.
That would be peak Bruins indeed. It's peak season in Boston right now. 650-650, as I mentioned, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. This one from Mike the Urologist from Brockville, of course. What's worse, being disappointed with your team as a seller or as a buyer? It has to be a seller. Because at least with a buyer...
By far.
At least with a buyer, you still have a good team. You're still going to the playoffs, right? And I'm by the way, I'm not like conceding the idea that fans should be disappointed if you're a Canucks fan today. But when you're a seller and there's a letdown, like remember the Dan Hamhuis incident
and Radim
episode
Verbata.
And Radim Verbata, that looms so large, like that's just so deflating because you have nothing to look forward to. All you wanted was a shred of hope in the form of a prospect or a pick or a feeling of, hey, at least we're getting something out of this miserable season. And then when it doesn't materialize, or even if it's underwhelming, man, that is just a really tough spot to be in. You know, you made the point about we've transitioned from debates about NHL 500 to debates about like points percentage. I had another kind
of... I hate fake NHL 500, by the way.
Yeah, it's annoying.
People like, they're 22-22. This was on the broadcast last night. They're 22-22-6. That sounds a lot like 500. It's like, sounds six games worse than 500.
You know, I had another kind of vision of Christmas's past
I think it was on Wednesday night, as all these big trades were happening and there's the Gensel discussion and Ottawa and Anaheim were playing each other in just like a totally irrelevant, mean nothing game, zero going on for these two teams. It's like, oh man, we've done that so much. We have watched that game so many times in recent years.
We've watched that game after the playoffs began.
After the playoffs began.
With a bunch of Canucks players still suffering from COVID.
Oh, I'm so happy I don't have to watch that game or have thoughts about it or have opinions about it or say that it means something. Thank goodness. So yeah, even if you're ultimately underwhelmed, it is so much better to be in the position that the Canucks are in than the than what they've been in years past going into the trade deadline.
Do you wanna let's recap trade deadline season to this point as we get in the last 25 minutes? Obviously, we'll
producer Dom, do you have something?
Well, did you want to expand on the Murph hit on Sportsnet?
Do you have his verbatim words?
Yeah.
All right.
So he went on Sportsnet just to report on what the Canucks are doing. They are still interested in acquiring a winger, but because of their cap crunch, they need help retaining.
So that would take Vetrano out of the mix because
yes,
the
Ducks cannot retain.
The Ducks cannot retain.
Now, you theoretically could do, but I think you still have to, like, if the Ducks traded him first to somewhere else, then that team retained 50%, then traded him to the Canucks, but that only gets him down to what? Like 1.75, something like that, in that range? So I don't know if that's enough to get it done without subtracting more from your roster.
Elliot Friedman reporting that Matt Dumba to Tampa Bay is picking up steam.
All right. There you go. That's the latest. That is, of course.
So it's not intensifying. It's just
picking up steam. Get the whistle ready. Steam in this case is on Matt Dumba to Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Are they in Gastown?
No, they're in the sports books. So I think there's a few interesting trends that we've seen emerge, big picture, from this trade deadline. One is that very few firsts moved. I think four firsts moved all told, right?
And is that counting the Carolina one? Because that's like,
No, no, no. I was not counting that.
Okay, because that I don't think you should. Because that's real. That's a conditional second that was framed as a conditional first.
I mean, it's a conditional first.
It is, but that's as unattractive as a first round pick can possibly be.
It's a conditional first with a very high barrier,
and literally it could only be the 31st or 32nd pick.
Yeah.
So
to actually pay out.
Yeah.
So in terms of what we saw require a first, I mean, it really was, you know, Lindholm, Monahan,
Hanifin.
Right? Hanifin, and there was one more from Henrik
and Carrick. Yeah.
So that's it. Four firsts moving. Everything else was sort of like multiple mid-round picks, right? Like a second and another mid-round pick if you were going to have retention involved, with like a second and a third being kind of the high end of the market for Tyler Toffoli, second and a fifth kind of being the low range, and then like a third for Duclair being kind of, you know, the lower end. The overall reluctance of teams to part with prospects, I think, shaped this deadline. The degrees of creativity with double retention, it's just like that's the flavor of the day. Teams figuring out different ways of navigating the complete absence, aside from Jake Allen, of goalie trades is fascinating to me, given how many teams could use one.
Need it, yep.
You know, we've seen so many guys struggle when acquired at midseason, right? The midseason goalie ad is a really tough one to pull off, despite the fact that, like, Aiden Hill was added right before the season by Tampa Bay, despite the fact that, who's the Ottawa goalie who's not very good? Korpisalo. Played really well for the Kings down the stretch last year. Despite all of that, it's been shocking to see how little movement we've seen on the goalie market. And, you know, as I...
Sean Walker, first-round pick as well.
Sean Walker, first-round pick. Okay, so
thank you to Brandon in Vancouver.
Five and a conditional. So five and a half. Five and a quarter.
Yeah, a quarter. I think that's fair.
Five and a quarter first. It's moved. So once again, a reiteration of draft picks, draft capital as cash on hand, the most important currency of the realm, right? You need draft picks to make moves. The Canucks have shown us that. Every team around the deadline showed us that as well. And, you know, an interesting level of aggression in the West that I think outpaced the level of aggression in the East.
100%.
Overall. Those are sort of the big picture, like, pullouts that I've got from this deadline overall.
This text came in. Or actually, sorry, I want to read this tweet from John Gambadoro, who's a sports
Arizona,
radio host in Arizona.
Super plugged in.
He says the Coyotes' deal with Tampa for Dumba is for a pick swap in the later rounds. And he also notes that it saves the Coyotes a couple million bucks as well. So the Coyotes, in just true Arizona form, prioritizing saving money over juicing the returns for their players. But Matt Dumba going to Tampa Bay. Dom, do you have the Murph update for us? Or did you already give us the Murph update?
He did.
You already gave us the Murph update. All right.
It's actually sad, by the way, the way that the Arizona Coyotes.
It's a huge bummer.
It's a huge bummer.
Like, if you, I know there are, I'm not going to, I don't want to do a whole thing dunking on Arizona here.
No,
but if you were actually a committed fan, like, that should drive you insane.
I think, I think even if you're just a fan of the league, like, it's 2024, man. It's 2024. This is substandard. This is not big league stuff that we're seeing from the Coyotes. I mean, I honestly think it makes light of or even a mockery of how seriously, like, fans in this market, media in this market, treat this league, treat this game. And I'm not saying we're silly to do so. You know, like, I grew up loving hockey. Mm-hmm. We've seen 2010 Olympics, the celebration after the 2002 Olympics, right? The celebrations in the streets in 2010, 2011. Like, we know how much hockey moves people. You know, we know that this matters to some extent. And it's just like, the way the Coyotes are operating, the way this is happening, Mullet Arena, the whole thing, like, it cheapens it.
It's at a step even relative to other low-budget teams in the NHL. Like, Anaheim's using all three of their retention spots right now. Anaheim's not a big financial powerhouse, but they're using their retention spots to make their hockey team better. Like, Arizona, it's embarrassing. Settling for less just so you save, at this point, not that much money in the grand scheme of things.
No.
And this is when they're also trying to sell us that, like, we're actually making great money at Mullet Arena, right? We're doing really well. We're cash flow positive. And yet, they can't invest a single dime of it in the team to actually make it better. I believe they don't have a single defenseman under contract for next year.
It's a real shame. It's just a real shame. And I, you know, I guarantee you the league's sick of it. I know the PA is sick of it. They're making no secret of it. We should all be sick of it. Like, I don't think you're like, I don't want to dunk on. It's like, no, we should dunk on them every chance we get. There's none of the other four major professional sports leagues have anything like this anymore. You know, you've occasionally had.
Yeah, the closest, I guess, they're moving would be like Oakland in MLB. Yeah. You could throw the Marlins in there maybe as well.
But it's Pittsburgh. In MLB, yeah. I mean, the MLB system sort of rewards.
Is so skewed.
Yeah, it sort of rewards teams operating to not win. But even then, I like, at least those ballparks are real ballparks.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know?
Yep.
So, I don't know. I honestly don't think there's anything like it. This is like those ABA merger teams in the NBA after they, like the St. Louis Spirit, you know? And it was just like, they're not the Flint Tropics. Like, come on.
Yeah. Matt Dumba and a seventh in 2025 to Tampa in exchange for a fifth round pick in 2027.
That's just free.
That's one of the funniest returns I have ever heard. No salary retention, of course, on Matt Dumba. So, look, I'm not saying Matt Dumba was a premium asset at this year's deadline, but that is a comically low return in exchange for not retaining any money.
Dumba has struggled immensely this year.
Yep.
It's worth noting.
All right, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. 15 minutes to the NHL trade deadline. Still no news from the Canucks other than the fact that they assigned Vasily Podkolzin to Abbotsford, which, of course, yes, it does open up roster space and salary cap space. It also makes him eligible for the AHL Calder Cup playoff. So it doesn't necessarily indicate that something else is happening. We heard the report from Murph that they're looking to do some salary retention. They are still trying to bring in a top nine winger. And, you know, we'll see. Again, as I said, it's trickle-in season, so it doesn't necessarily have to happen in the next 15 minutes or be announced in the next 15 minutes. But time running out here for the Canucks to make an addition to the trade deadline. This text comes in, unsigned. I feel like Bukala super casually dropped Alex Tuch interest, and we haven't talked about it since. I don't think Books was reporting that the Canucks were necessarily in on Alex Tuch, more that he'd heard that Buffalo was open to trading him. But I mean, if you're talking about kind of surprise moves, wingers with term that they would be willing to part with a premium asset for. You know, you'd have to do some salary retention and making some other things work. You'd have to get creative. I mean, he fits that mold. He would be an absolutely maybe a great pickup.
I guarantee you the Canucks would be interested, but based on what they haven't been willing to pay
for rentals,
this point
though,
today for rentals.
For rentals, but he's not a rental.
Yeah, I get it.
So that's the only, I'm not, look, it's a long shot at this point, 11:46.
I struggle to imagine though. You know, like they wouldn't have viewed Guentzel as a pure rental either, even though he wouldn't have arrived with you know, a willingness necessarily to discuss extension off the hop. So I don't know. I struggle to imagine the team really splurging on a piece like that, given that they weren't willing to pay for Guentzel, who's like the apple of their eye. You know, like that to me is instructive. It's really hard for me to not weight that as the last 13 minutes ahead of the deadline approach.
All right, we're going to test your, you have a take on basically everybody in the NHL powers here.
Oh,
although,
man,
these might be AHL guys. The Pens have acquired Ludovic Weber and a conditional 2025 seventh round pick, a conditional seventh round pick from the Florida Panthers in exchange for Magnus Helberg.
Yeah, no, that one's, that one I don't have a take on.
Big, but, big CJ bomb right there.
But I don't really have takes on goalies, right? Like goalies aren't my cup of tea. Yeah, I mean, Ludovic Weber doesn't seem like a thing. Magnus Helberg kind of is. Like, at least he's a guy who can give you NHL games.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's the take on that one. All right. Final few minutes here before we're going to go to break right before the deadline. I'll try to go to break a couple minutes early, actually, so that we... What? What are you looking at me like that for, Doug?
You can go right till noon.
All right. But
great.
I feel like it's better to come back at 11:58, no?
You can do both.
Okay. Probably should have had this talk before we were on air. All right. I want you to
breaking trade. Jamie and Dom exchanged ideas.
We exchanged thoughts on the air, live on the air. I want you to rank, like, how accurate, how fair are the various coping talking points if the Canucks don't do
anything. Yeah, let's do the cope.
So number one.
Cope tiers.
And I'm not saying any of these are illegitimate, right? I can share my thoughts on them as well.
No, I'll tell you if they're illegitimate.
Number one. Canucks already made their big moves in Lindholm and Zadorov.
I mean, I think that's fair. I think that's fair. It's just that, you know, okay. I guess I think it's fair if you want to cope that way, but I also think you need to note, like, and it turns out that those big moves have resulted in a guy who's playing on the third pair and a guy who's playing on the third line.
That's fair.
You know, like, if that's where you're taking solace, I think that's, like, poor ground for you to stand on. I think you're better off folding in Lafferty and Hronek and DeSmith and all of
the totality
of it that the Canucks have paid for, and then being like, and it's worked. This team is fun as heck. I think that makes a lot more sense, because if you're really trying to hang your hat on that particular hook, it's like those guys have been bit players.
So far.
At expensive acquisition costs.
All right. So that's one. Yeah, I think you probably do have to fold in the entire aggression,
if you want a bit of aggression into it. If you want to cope convincingly, that's the way to do it.
All right, how about this? Got Soucy back this week. You're going to get Myers and Dakota Joshua back. Those are like deadline pickups for this team when they all get healthy.
Oh, man. The problem is like, there's this myth that exists when a team has like a couple injuries. That's like, and when those guys get back, we'll cook. But it's like, you're going to have more injuries.
Yes.
Like, that's...
Players get injured. Also, well, never...
And watch these games. Like, watch that Kings game and that Vegas game again, and the way that they're being played. You know, like, this is the type of year where the grinding style of hockey, where the urgency on the ice makes injuries an inevitability, right? Like, what do we always say? At this time of year, at least 5 guys per team could go on LTI. Right? At any moment, everyone's banged up. Everyone's hurt. And the pace goes up and the urgency goes up and injuries are inevitable. So Joshua will come back and that'll be a big boost. But also, you're probably going to have someone else go out. Like, that's That's hockey at this time of year. That's spring hockey, baby.
My problem with that, not as it specifically relates to the Canucks, but this is something that crops up every year from different teams, right? Like, hey, this guy coming back is going to be like our own deadline edition. Is it's not an either or thing. You know, you could do a real deadline edition and then still get your healthy players back, theoretically. And then it's like you did a bonus deadline edition.
Jack Roslovic.
You took it from
me. Moves from the Columbus Blue Jackets to the New York Rangers for a mid-round pick in 2026. Jack Roslovic, a pretty consistent 40-point guy, and a player that in the past the Canucks have had some interest. I wondered about him as a potential, you know, low-end, like, settle-tier target for the team. He's going to New York, it seems.
All right, the trade desk brought to you by Jags Furniture and Mattress, and just sticking with another update here, Max Pacioretty staying with the Capitals. Of course, he was a pending UFA, or is a pending UFA, but does have the full no-move clause, so he was in complete control of that situation. Not a big surprise to see that Max Pacioretty will be staying in Washington for the duration of the season. Final 8 minutes here. We'll take a break. We'll be back. We'll wrap up the final few minutes, see if the Canucks do anything, if there are anything, any news trickling in after the deadline, or if we get the they're done for the day update from one of the local insiders. We will have it here first. We'll do the whiteboard in the next segment as well. Hopefully we'll have kind of, we'll be able to wrap up everything that happened around the deadline for the Canucks. Trade deadline, it's happening next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.